My name is Dave Emery, and what we're going to do this evening is to use some of the archives to reflect on one of the major news stories of this past week, which was President Clinton's trip to Central America, in which he not only took responsibility for much of the violence that had taken place there, but also on behalf of the United States, I should say, but he also specifically mentioned the culpability of the United States in many of the horrors that have undertaken Guatemala since the overthrow of Mr. Arbenz in 1954. What we're going to do on this program is to utilize some of the information from Radio Free America program number 16, recorded in March of 1986, that discusses, among other things, the involvement of the United States in the coup in Guatemala, the formation of the colonel, I guess what we could say, of Latin American death squads in conjunction with U.S. intelligence and also the Latin American branch of the World Anti-Communist League, and that's union, I guess one could say, was to a certain extent synthesized by some veterans of the Third Reich who were working for U.S. intelligence, a combination that we've seen many times in the past. What we're going to do is to take a look at the involvement specifically of the Latin American branch of the World Anti-Communist League with the formation of Latin American death squads in Guatemala, and then in an escalating fashion using the Latin American branch of WACL as sort of a seed or a kernel. In addition to my own voice, you're also going to hear the voice of my former co-host, Nip Tuck, who very capably assisted me with the on-air responsibilities. This, again, was recorded in March of 1986, and what you're going to do is, what we're going to be doing for the next pair of half hours, is to listen to some of the past reflecting upon the present. And hopefully this will not only give people, this will give people a new perspective on what has taken place in Guatemala and much of the rest of Central America, even people relatively familiar with the course of events there. This is, again, Radio Free America program number 16, the second of two broadcasts about the World Anti-Communist League. And in addition to my own voice, you will also hear the voice of my very charming and capable former co-host, Nip Tuck.
The first article that I'm going to read from tonight is from a book called The Great Heroin Coup: Drugs, Intelligence, and International Fascism. The book is copyright 1980 by South End Press. It's written by a Danish journalist, Henrik Kruger, okay, K-R-U-G-E-R, an excellent book which we've used quite a bit here on KFJC. Kruger writes, in 1953 to 1954, the CIA drew on old China hands with exposure to Kuomintang traffic, namely Chenault, Willauer, William Pauley, Howard Hunt, to set up the overthrow of the Arbenz government in Guatemala, an operation which at least contemplated the use of, quote, Puerto Rican and Cuban gangsters. Let me just mention real quickly, the Arbenz government in Guatemala was a legally, democratically elected government, but Arbenz himself, people in the United States felt, was too close to the leftist elements in his own country. Again, mind you, this man is the legally and democratically elected president, so we helped to put together, the CIA put together a revolution, a coup that overthrew the Arbenz government and destroyed democracy in Guatemala for 30 years. And for 30 years, of course, Guatemala has been the worst center of torture and terror of Latin America. So that's what they're talking about here. As part of this operation, we see CIA officer Howard Hunt, a veteran, with his friend Lucien Conin and Conin's friend Mitch Werbel of OSS operations in China under Helliwell, helping in 1954 to set up what would eventually become the Latin American branch of the KMT, the Kuomintang-backed World Anti-Communist League. 4 years later, the chairman of this group was the Guatemalan attorney of New Orleans mafia leader Carlos Marcello. So, a couple of points real quickly. What we're seeing here is in 1954, at the time, the CIA setting up a private army under CIA veterans to overthrow the legitimate government of Guatemala. This in contact with the Kuomintang and the Kuomintang's drug traffic and other methods of funding itself. Became the basis for the World Anti-Communist League in Latin America. You will also notice the appearance of the Guatemalan attorney of mafiosa Carlos Marcello. Carlos Marcello will crop up later in 1963 when he plays a key part in the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Also connected with David Ferry, one of the main people around 544 Camp Street, one of the two addresses that served both as the headquarters of the campaign, the Free Cuba Committee, and the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, excuse me, and also served as the basis for the Cuban Revolutionary Council, the umbrella group formed by, among others, E. Howard Hunt to subsume all of the anti-Castro Cuban groups under one umbrella for the U.S. intelligence establishment. Note also that we have an evolution here, going back to our Aryan nations. We looked at the MacArthur group, the many fascists on MacArthur's staff, MacArthur's own connections to the Morgan Financial Group and Industrial Group, and we looked at how the China lobby was intimately connected with and grew out of the MacArthur group, and in turn, how the China lobby became, as indicated here, the Guatemalan lobby, and then eventually the Cuban lobby with the formation of the so-called Cuban Fry Corps in relation to the Bay of Pigs and Operation 40. Now, remember also, carrying on with that same theme, that the formation of the CAL, the Latin American branch of the World Anti-Communist League, was originally formed by U.S. intelligence, and as we're going to see, it basically is, for all intents and purposes, a front for U.S. intelligence or elements thereof, and even though it is in drastic conflict to many the values of the United States, it's basically a U.S. intelligence operation. Reading now from Crime and Cover-Up, subtitled The CIA, the Mafia, and the Dallas Watergate Connection, authored by UCal Berkeley professor Peter Dale Scott. It's published by Westworks Publisher in Berkeley and is copyrighted 1977. Reading now from Crime and Cover-Up by Peter Dale Scott. The CIA had long used the Mafia's corrupt influence in Caribbean dictatorships as an asset in its own anti-communist arsenal. Thus, the chairman of a 1958 anti-communist conference in Guatemala, of a group organized for the CIA 4 years earlier by E. Howard Hunt, was Antonio Valladares, V-A-L-L-A-D-A-R-E-S, the law partner of the CIA-installed Minister of the Interior and the attorney for New Orleans mafioso Carlos Marcello. Valladares once arranged for Marcello's false birth registration in Guatemala. Present at the 1958 meeting was a New Orleans lawyer, Maurice B. Gatlin, who was also involved in other anti-communist activities at the 544 Camp Street address used by Lee Harvey Oswald. So keep in mind, not only Valladares, his relationship with Marcello, his chairing of the CAL, the Latin branch of the World Anti-Communist League, begun out of the Arbenz coup set up by U.S. intelligence and set up by eventual Watergate burglar E. Howard Hunt. But keep in mind also that Maurice Brooks Gatlin, who fell from in 1964, fell from the window of a Panama hotel, that he is a key member and present at the same 1958 conference, because we're going to be coming back not only to the CAL and U.S. intelligence, but also eventually to the Wackles' role in the assassination of President Kennedy.
Right now, we're going to be coming back immediately, as a matter of fact, to CAL, because we're going to be talking about CAL's involvement in the death squads of Latin America. And running parallel at the same time, although I won't keep talking about it all night, is the fact that CAL and these groups right now are very heavily involved with with Anastasio Somoza's guardsmen, National Guardsmen in Nicaragua, the people who are right now being used as the actual military leaders of the Contra military action. And the rest of the World Anti-Communist League is being lined up behind these people to get them funding, and John Singlaub, American General John Singlaub, ex of the John Birch Society, now running the World Anti-Communist League branch, has entree right into the Oval Office and is taking orders directly from Ronald Reagan. So bear in mind when we're reading this Jack Anderson column that these people are working as de facto American agents.
Also remember now, too, that the death squads in El Salvador, as we're going to see in more detail, are intimately connected and, in fact, run by this group.
Okay. Reading from Jack Anderson's column from San Francisco Chronicle for January 12, 1984. The headline is International Death Squads. Behind the violence in Latin America are not only left-wing guerrillas, but right-wing assassins who belong to death squads. I have learned, Anderson writes, there's an international league of death squads which operate from Mexico to Argentina. Ordinarily, they maintain the strictest secrecy about their operations, but Through a contact in the Honduran secret police, my associate, John Lee Anderson, arranged a face-to-face interview in Honduras with an outspoken leader and founder of the Honduran Death Squad. He is a thin, fair-haired man in his 30s, who I will call El Lobo, the wolf. By day, he is a doctor at the National Hospital in Tegucigalpa. By night, he is an assassin for ELA, the Spanish acronym for Anti-Communist Combat Army. The ELA is a relatively new death squad, founded in 1979. Unlike its counterparts in Guatemala, El Salvador, and Argentina, the ELA is not made up primarily of paramilitary security forces, according to El Lobo. The ELA had close ties, he said, with the Maximiliano Hernandez Martinez Brigade in El Salvador. This is the group that recently slaughtered 9 members of a peasant cooperative, including 2 pregnant women, as part of a stepped-up campaign of terror. Human rights groups estimate that 40,000 people have died in El Salvador since 1980. About half of those were civilians who were suspected of leftist leanings and were murdered by the death squads. El Lobo expressed admiration for the Salvadoran death squad and the general whose name it took. General Hernandez was a Salvadoran dictator who ordered the massacre of an estimated 30,000 Indians and peasants after a communist-backed uprising in the 1930s. El Lobo gave this account of the International Fraternity of Death Squads, quote, "We go to annual conferences. I went to last year's. It was in Buenos Aires. The AAA put it on." He was not referring to an automobile association, but to the Argentine Anti-Communist Alliance. This is a clandestine confederation of police, military, and paramilitary goons responsible for thousands of murders and other disappearances during the, quote, "dirty war" of the 1970s. The overall umbrella group for the Death Squad network is CAL, CAL, Latin American Anti-Communist Confederation, based in Mexico. CAL, or CAL, is our political front, said El Lobo. We are all La Mano Blanca. La Mano Blanca, the white hand, is the name for the warning white glove or handprint left on or near a victim's body. According to a former CIA dirty tricks specialist, La Mano Blanco was set up by the CIA in Guatemala in the 1950s after the agency engineered the ouster of leftist president Jacobo Arbenz. Although now a member of La Mano Blanco's network, the Honduran Death Squad organization was set up independently, El Lobo said. Quote, 85 of us, mostly graduate students, got together and formed ELA, he said. We were tired of Marxist control of the student union and faculty, the labor unions. We wanted to do what the military legally couldn't do to stop them. With a laugh, the doctor assassin said of his bloody work, quote, we call it environmental sanitation, unquote. Okay, again, now notice the fact that La Mano Blanco, the very concept in this case of this sort of controlled, organized terror comes again out of the CIA coup in the 1950s, in 1954 specifically, that we just read about, that contact between the then beginnings of the World Anti-Communist League, the Kuomintang, the China lobby, and the CIA special Latin American branches, bringing those all together and eventually connecting back into various other American groups, including organized crime, as we will talk about later. Again, notice that these groups are not, just as we were talking about during the Aryan Nations, these are not groups who just happen to be a bunch of nutcases running around in the jungles. These are people who get together and have conventions. They have conferences. They sponsor seminars. These people are well organized, and in many cases, one of the reasons they're well organized is because they are being supported by yours and my tax dollars.
Okay, continuing now, with the development of the CAL, and in particular its connections to U.S. intelligence and international fascism. Jack Anderson's column from the next day, following the article Nip Tuck read you, specifically the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, January 13, 1984, is entitled International Murder Incorporated. It continues with the same theme. Operating at the subterranean level of Latin American politics is a far-flung network of affiliated death squads. Their purpose? To intimidate suspected leftists and deter movements that threaten the status quo throughout Latin America. Their methods? kidnapping and assassinations, secret pacts, intrigues, terrorism, and blackmail. But what is truly appalling is the possibility that the idea of an anti-communist murder incorporated was germinated at CIA headquarters. Sources familiar with the secret history, including a former covert operations specialist for the CIA, say the death squads were first formed under agency sponsorship in 1954. This is denied by CIA officials. Dedicated to the physical elimination of suspected leftists, they recruited assassins from the military services, police forces, and security agencies of right-wing governments. And again, hearkening back to the theme developed both during Aryan Nations and our first Wackel show, the World Anti-Communist League and the closely affiliated Reagan administration are sort of the ultimate exponents of the Freikorps methodology. And again, the Freikorps and what that was explained in great detail in those broadcasts. That basically were the Nazi death squads who paved Hitler's rise to power and served as the model for, apparently, and there are intimate connections with, served as the model for the Wackel. And the Contras, the El Salvadorian death squads, and so forth. Continuing with Anderson's account. Today, the death squads are most active in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. Dormant death squads exist in almost every other Latin American nation. In all these countries, they are protected by high-level military and government officials. Their activities are loosely controlled and coordinated by a sinister international organization known as La Mano Blanco, the White Hand. Quote, "Our movements are all coordinated out of Mexico City," unquote, said a leader of the Honduran death squad. The name of the front group there is CAL, Latin American Anti-Communist Confederation. CAL is the Latin American affiliate of the World Anti-Communist League, a right-wing organization linked to ultra-conservative groups in Asia, Europe, and the United States. A Mexican intelligence source said CAL was founded by a neo-Nazi splinter group after World War II. As we're going to see, this group actually got going before World War II and has about a 50-year continuous record of activity on behalf of fascism. Continuing, CAL is also called the White Hand, the White Force, and the White Brigade, said the source. So, again, this death squad network that we're talking about here was founded by and sponsored by U.S. intelligence, and as we've seen with the Galen organization that we're going to be coming back to, the Nazi Eastern Front Intelligence Organization, in its anti-communist zeal, our intelligence system has never hesitated to use fascists, old or new.
Okay, now lest people who listen to these broadcasts and wonder why we keep talking about things like Ronald Reagan's desire to send hundreds of millions of dollars to the Contras, why we link these things up with, say, the Nazis and the coming of Nazism to Europe in the 1930s and the prosecution of the war during the 1940s by the Nazis, why we keep linking these kinds of things together. Again, just to continue along this chain of the development of the Latin American death squads, bear these things in mind and keep these questions in your mind while I'm reading this article, again from the San Francisco Chronicle, another Jack Anderson column for February 9th, 1984, headlined Anti-Semitic Death Squads. The jackboot and the swastika lurk behind the continuing slaughter of tens of thousands of Latin Americans by right-wing death squads. This is the inescapable conclusion of a year-long investigation by my staff. Hitler's thousand-year Reich collapsed in smoking ruins nearly 40 years ago. But the Nazis' ugly concepts of anti-Semitism and racial purity have survived among right-wing elements in Latin American countries. Some of them gave refuge to Nazi war criminals. Sources close to President Reagan tell me he is growing increasingly concerned at U.S. support for governments that condone these right-wing murderers. He has told intimates that he wants to take a tougher position against the death squad's activities. I agree. Parenthetically, I would have to insert that I think his tougher position is to send them a lot of money in hopes that they become the government real quickly so they're not so embarrassing.
Humanitarian aid, it's called.
Humanitarian aid, excuse me. I sent my associate, Anderson writes, John Lee Anderson, to Guatemala and Honduras, and my associate Dale Van Atta to Argentina, Paraguay, and Chile to investigate reported links among the Latin American death squads. They found persuasive evidence that the Latin American Anti-Communist Confederation, an affiliate of the once-respected World Anti-Communist League, has been used as a front for the region's assassination groups. Again, I don't know quite who once respected the World Anti-Communist League, but Jack Anderson has just become sort of born again on the subject of death squads, and he can be forgiven, perhaps, having a little shaky grasp on the previous history of the World Anti-Communist League. Here are some additional frightening details. The men who run WACL out of Guadalajara, Mexico, and appear to give several death squads their marching orders, belong to a secret society run by powerful anti-Semitic businessmen and lawyers. Sources in WACL say the Guadalajara group uses its anti-Semitic credentials to solicit money from wealthy Arabs, whom they refer to as Turcos, Turks. One WACL letter, World Anti-Communist League letter, in my possession discloses that these Middle East sources pledged at least $50,000 to the League's 1978 conference in Washington. Convincing evidence that the death squad's front groups are more enthusiastic in their anti-Semitism than in their anti-communism is the World Anti-Communist League's willingness to have representatives of the Palestine Liberation Organization speak at its meetings. The PLO is Soviet-backed. We'll put an asterisk next to that one, and we'll come back to that also. One former top official of WACL is a notorious proponent of the Nazis' super-race theories. In fact, some of his moderate WACL colleagues wrote in an internal document that any group he supports gives them, quote, immediate cause for alarm and suspicion that the organization recommended is an anti-Semitic, racist, neo-Nazi, or pro-Nazi organization working under the label of national or nationalist. Ever since World War II, right-wing militarists in Latin America have idealized the Nazi war machine. Germans of the Hitler era, are still depicted as supermen in certain Latin American magazines. When death squads gather, they speak with awe of their Nazi prototypes, and some even wear swastikas. Okay, now skipping down through the points in this article, Ronald Reagan's uneasiness with the right-wing murderers is kind of an entertaining thought, considering the fact that the very people he's supporting right now so strenuously in Nicaragua are most of them all the key military people are ex-Somocista National Guardsmen who are all very much connected into this, and the people who are funding them now are all people who are also very much connected into the World Anti-Communist League and the death squads. When they talk about the men who run the World Anti-Communist League out of Guadalajara, Mexico, we're going to talk about them a little bit later, but again, to suggest that they are at the top of the pyramid is perhaps to miss the point, which is who organized that pyramid in the first place and who placed these people at the top of the pyramid. We're going to be talking about the Guadalajarans a little later on in the broadcast. Okay, skipping on down, again, now it is interesting that the PLO, or representatives of the PLO show up at the World Anti-Communist League's meetings. The PLO is ostensibly Soviet-backed, although as we've observed from time to time, there are numerous connections on behalf of the CIA within the PLO, and we've detailed those in past Radio Free Americas, and we will be talking about them in upcoming ones, as a matter of fact. And again, you have to look at certain segments of the Palestine Liberation Organization, which never do actually the cause of the Palestinians any good whatsoever, and their strident embrace of their contact with the Soviet Union right after they've blown up a bunch of innocent tourists somewhere is the kind of thing that tends to give the Soviet Union a real bad name, and it's interesting that these people would then be also showing up at World Anti-Communist League meetings.
Okay, now the CAL, based in Guadalajara, the Mano Blanco, the White Hand, is also called Los Ticos, or really, actually, that's the name of the fascist society in Guadalajara that runs it. And apparently, a victim, or at least a very strong possibility, is that a man named Buendia, and one of the key Mexican journalists of the past couple of decades, was a victim of Los Ticos of the CAL coming out of Guadalajara. Research credit for the following story goes to Ted Rubenstein, an excellent researcher who's been sharing his work with us for some time. Ted got this for us from the Financial Times of London, specifically from their issue, the Financial Times issue of June 7th, 1984. The article's called Journalist's Murder Stuns Mexicans. It's by Financial Times reporter David Gardner in Mexico City. Last week's assassination of Manuel Buendia, B-U-E-N-D-I-A, Mexico's most widely read newspaper columnist, has set off a chain of political tremors, not because gun-toting Mexicans are unaccustomed to violence, but because the killing appears to break all the rules by which violence is normally exercised. Señor Buendia specialized in denouncing corruption and the abuse of power, the CIA's activities in Mexico, and as we've seen with their connection to, interrupting here, as we've seen with the CIA's connections to CAL, it being based in Guadalajara and being the nexus of all of these Latin American death squads, that the CIA's activities in CAL would appear to be heavily interlocking here. Anyway, continuing with a sentence. Ms. Senior Buendia specialized in denouncing corruption and the abuse of power, the CIA's activities in Mexico, and the far right, which centers on the Roman Catholic Church hierarchy and allied organizations such as the Opus Dei sectors of private business and perceived U.S. interference in local affairs. We'll be coming to the Opus Dei in our five-part series about the shooting of the Pope in May. Continuing, the cutting edge of this alliance is located either in traditional right-wing parties like the Opposition and National Action Party, PAN, or in more sinister groups such as the so-called TECOS, T-E-C-O-S, a fascist paramilitary organization which has virtually taken over the University of Guadalajara. Investigation into the killings center on TECOS, the subject of several recent denunciations by Senor Buendia. As zealots, the TECOS would not necessarily abide by unwritten conventions on discreetly disposing of one's enemies. More than 30 journalists have been murdered in Mexico since 1971. Two more were killed shortly after Senor Buendia's death. But there have been no recent incidents of so brazen an attack on such a public figure as Senor Buendia, whose murder breaks the mold of Mexico's semi-institutionalized violence. So, keep in mind the fate of Mr. Buendia, what he was investigating, CIA activities in Mexico, perceived American interference in local affairs, and also Los Tecos. And as we're going to see in the column, which the Jack Anderson column, which Nip Tuck is going to take up right now, those would appear to be largely interlocking organizations.
We're going to get to that column, however, in the next side of this particular tape. You have been listening to an excerpt of Radio Free America program number 15, recorded on March 18th, 1986. In addition to my own voice, you heard the voice of my very charming and capable co-host, Nip Tuck, who assisted me with the on-air responsibilities. We're going to return to the subject of Latin American death squads, the culpability of the United States, the Latin American branch of the World Anti-Communist League, and political tendrils running back in time to Nazi Germany and running forward to, at least at the time, to relationships between the organization responsible for the death squads, a university in Guadalajara, and 13 different American universities. That relationship subsumed under the auspices of the Agency for International Development. All of the various tapes that I've produced over the years, including RFA 15, which you heard excerpted, are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They're located at P.O. Box 1179, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, zip code 95005. The email address is spitfire@ix.netcom.com. That's spitfire@ix.netcom.com. You can also see a list of description of the various tapes available from Spitfire on the Spitfire webpage. That's www.netcom.com/ALCALAME. www.netcom.com/ALCALAME. And in the next half-hour segment, we're going to jump back in time once again, almost exactly 13 years. This being recorded on March 14th of 1999. And we're going to listen to RFA 15 from March 18th, 1986, in order to reflect on some of the history of U.S. involvement in Central America. That concludes this segment. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.